Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. What? It's over the bar.
Hello, welcome to the RTEGA podcast. I'm Mikey Stafford. How are you all doing? We have, bar a stray Wexford-Kilkenny match, we have pretty much a football weekend coming up. So we've got Oisín McConville, Tomás O'Shea and Rory O'Neill with us to discuss all that. How are you getting on, lads?
Good, Mikey.
Mikey, how's it going?
Hey, Mikey, how are things?
Good. So I've gathered two esteemed football men with us, so we might as well start with a hurling story. But it is a story that's kind of been dominating this week, and it's got to the point now where it's not really a hurling story. So I'm not going to ask either of you to talk about sweepers or playing through the lines. Don't worry about that. It's more to do with the Wexford Clare situation, obviously, and the ramifications this could have for the summer. A very, very quick recap, because this has had more to and fro in an episode of Murder, She Wrote. Two Clare players were deemed close contacts by the HSC, by contact tracers, after a couple of Wexford lads tested positive after their league match a couple of weeks ago. So, Q, a lot of anger in Clare and accusations of this, that, and the other thing, which we don't want to go into. Wexford going back saying that they didn't identify the players, it was the HSC. It's gone back and forth and back and forth. But, Oisín, what this basically boils down to is that somebody in the contact tracing unit of the HSE, however you want to describe it, have deemed that two players from Clare who marked two Wexford players, they've been deemed as close contacts and thus had to get tested and have had to isolate for 10 to 14 days. Maybe it's a one-off kind of error or a strange ruling, but it could have ramifications for the summer, couldn't it?
Well, in an outside scenario, I think, I never foreseen this problem coming down the track, but it has created a very dangerous precedent for our games, more so than anything, as summer moves forward, and an opportunity maybe for some skullduggery. Would that be the best way of putting it? And even if there's no skullduggery going on, people might feel as if that would be the reason behind certain things, but as I say, it's a dangerous one, and I hope it's one that we are able to, we're not just sitting and letting this burn out, that we're able to get some dialogue going between the GAA and HSE and come to some sort of compromise, not necessarily a compromise, but a decision going forward. And is this going to be what we're going to be putting up with for the rest of the year? But I'll go back to the fact that, you know, in an outdoor setting, this seems pretty wide of the mark.
Yeah, just emphasise that Wexford obviously deny any skullduggery, and they have been backed up by Fergal. I know you weren't.
I wasn't suggesting.
No, I know what you mean, though. It does open up the opportunity. Yeah,
there's certain counties in the country that might use that.
Who
would love it,
Oisín? Who would use that?
Well, Kerry for one.
If you were to do it, of course, Tomás, it does seem to me, it seems to come to this result where Wexford have three players testing positive and Clare have two players deemed close contact. It's a bizarre situation.
I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I think Oisín is right in terms of, you know, if you're a cornerback and you're marking David Clifford and suddenly the cornerback has it and David Clifford has to sit out or some big players, I think there's ramifications. The whole way in terms of close contacts, Mikey, and it just, the whole thing baffles me, like the whole country in different areas in terms of people working. I'm a teacher and I'm not classified a close contact if somebody gets it in the room. Yet two lads from Clare who played a game, and all the study that went into the percentages in terms of picking it up outside, and two lads from Clare are picked out as close contacts, and Brian Lohan, I thought, was 100% right in being angry the way he was. And I do think the GAA need to come out, and I think they probably will, have some system. The normal system in a situation like this is just keep it quiet or whatever it is that seems to be the norm. But all this stuff is going on in general life all around us at the moment, and it's very frustrating. Every single part of, you'll have situations everywhere, and close contact, what is a close contact, what is not, who should go for a test, who shouldn't. I think the whole thing is ridiculous. Like, the sooner we get the whole bloody country vaccinated, the better.
Rory, it is, like, the, as Tomás alluded to there, Brian Lowen was very angry, and like, there are flames of, the petrol going on the flames here, obviously, is Wexford and Clare, the two managers, are known to not get along anymore. But to just get away from that, we have had an incident. We had an incident last October where Offaly had to call off a Christy Ring game because a couple of the members of the panel got it.
Sligo didn't fulfil their championship.
The Offaly case in particular was, there was a few cases in their squad, and all 27 members of the squad were ruled out, as the rest of them were deemed close contacts. Mm. I think that case afterwards was seen to be, obviously, there was errors in how they were categorised. But, you know, there have been instances where, you know, the categorisations have gone a bit haywire already. But this one is very high profile, and as lads have alluded to, it could lead to, shall we say, copycat cases, for want of a better phrase.
I think it probably pertains, if we were to go down that Machiavellian route, I think hurling would probably be more at risk, given there's a backdoor element in hurling. If you're knocked out in football, sure, what difference does it make? You're gone. But like, the thing for me, to go back to what Tomás just mentioned, the inconsistencies around the actual policies here is a big problem. This has been the case from the very, very start. You know, go to the toilet. You can, you know, you have to go inside, but you have to sit outside. You have to sit outside, but you have to sit inside. If you want to go there, you have to go, you know, like, there's all these, like, the rules all around COVID from the very start have had massive gray areas and massive inconsistencies from the get-go. I think, to be fair to the GA, I think they did clarify from the very start what the difference was between a casual and a close contact. And to be fair to Lohan, we ran the piece on Sunday night last. His reasoning seemed fairly rock solid from our point of view, in that they have adopted all of the policies to ensure that they would never be deemed as a close contact. And that meant training outside, not use of dressing rooms, all those types of things, traveling on the day, etc. So I think ultimately it just comes back to the definitions. Who then is declaring these definitions? Is the Midwest HSE, whoever made the decision on their part, are they going to adopt a similar policy to somebody who might have to make the same call above in Connacht? Then you're into a whole myriad of problems, because what if something like this were to happen within the six counties, which are operating under a different constituency altogether, you know? So I would have a certain element of sympathy for the governing body, as in the GAA, on this part, because I think all they can do is lay out the guidelines as best as they can and hope that everybody adheres to them. I think ultimately what's happened here is it's devolved into a she said scenario, and I don't think that's helpful in any way, shape or fashion.
You're the second person today who struggled with "he said, she said" in my company. It's a tricky one. It's a tongue twister. It's just a bit of a mess. And as the further you go into it, we're not answering any of the questions. Yeah. So we might actually move on to the presence of fans this weekend, Tomás, up in the games in the north, which is great. Obviously, no opposition fans. So Leitrim, Donegal, Monaghan, and Longford will be going into, you know, your veritable bear pits, where there'll be 400 to 500 fans baying for blood. I'd say they'll love that, won't they? They won't care if they're cheering against them. Just the sound of somebody in the crowd, it'll G up the away fans as much as the home, or sorry, the away team as much as the home team, I'd imagine, would you?
Yeah, if you think back to the first time the games were actually televised, and I think there was no noise, and it was weird and it was strange. It was strange being at them. And the next thing, as the championship wore on, you did get, you heard noise, you heard the subs and the management, and there was roaring and there was G-ups and all this. And I do think it makes a huge difference. It makes a huge difference to certain teams. Crowds make a difference. And it is great to see them back. It's a pity that you can't have it, and you have teams travelling up to the north and they can't carry supporters, but any time that we have supporters allowed to come back, it's a sign that normality is returning in some sense. And Oisín says that the North are that little bit ahead of us. So, and I think that they'll probably be that little bit ahead of us for a while. So, you know, the Ulster Championship might even have more crowds in. I'm not sure, is there a rule taken on that yet? But it would be brilliant. You see what's happening across the water in the soccer and the crowds out there. It does make a difference. It makes a huge difference. Even watching a television and the atmosphere that can be there. Will it make a difference in certain games? I don't know. Can you honestly put up your hand and say the crowd won it for us today? You know, you always hear it, but I'm not sure it, but definitely in terms of atmosphere, in terms of the players, in terms of everybody else, it's great to see it.
The All-Ireland final in Clonus. We can ask, who's the new man up there? Who's the new man up there, Rush? Poots, is that his name? Poots?
Edwin.
Edwin Poots.
I've heard him call a couple of other things, but yeah, that's his name. I was just thinking of Monaghan going to Oman on Saturday night. The Throne fans will have the Welcome to Hell banner back out. it is a positive thing. Mm. And maybe a little bit more significant than people might realise. You know, to have that little bit of extra noise first and foremost, but also like if you're going to Tyrone and Tyrone need a bit of an edge for the last 10 minutes, it probably can be significant enough, I think. But look, it's 500 fans. It's early stages, but yeah.
It's better than nothing.
Exactly, it's a positive.
So you heard it with the last couple of rounds of the Premier League, we'd be watching it, and there's whatever. 7,000-8,000 people in the King Power Stadium for Leicester's game against for their final game and against Spurs, and it sounded deafening because we're not used to it. It actually, just the genuine noise of the fans sounded so much more authentic and probably sounded louder. But I was wondering, Tomás, just thinking of the away fans, I was just wondering the away teams and the fact that the only people they'll be hearing are home fans, opposing fans. Wondering in your career, I can't imagine you went through your career without having some interaction or altercation or some, getting something feedback from an opposition fan at some stage in your career.
Yeah, I actually got a clip off a Tyrone fan one day.
Oh, yes.
After a match.
Okay.
It was the time when fans were allowed to come onto the pitch, and we had the game lost, and a little bit of nastiness had come into me. I knew the game was up, and we had lost, and Ryan McManaman had come up the field and he passed the ball over my head, and I knew the game was up and we had lost. So I just followed through with an elbow straight into his head, really. And the whistle just went. It went straight away, and fans came on. And when you lose in All Ireland, you're just standing there. You don't know what to do. You don't know. You have to stay on for a bit of respect. You have to watch them lift the cup, but you don't know where to go or whatever. And this guy was coming at me. And I was just looking out of the corner of my eye, and I thought he was celebrating. But as he got closer, you could see the intent in his eye, and he drove into me. But I was by the stage, like he was kind of after, I'd say, a good couple of pints. Maybe he was a little bit heavy, and it took him a while to get to me, so I could read the situation. And by the time he actually landed, Galvin was standing beside me, and I think Galvin hit him a 1-2. And then we just both walked off. I think Kerry fans came in, but I think the Dublin fans jump out at me straight away. Up the north, they love their football. It's like the northern fans after matches, they'd come out and then they'd want to talk to you. You saw it with Michael Murphy the last day with the Tyrone fan engaging. And there's something in it like that. You want to kind of have the crowds back. But in terms of, like, Paddy came out with that famous comment, they can be as poisonous. If you lose, your own fans can be just as poisonous. Fans have such a huge part in our games. It's massive. And the sooner we have them back, the games, I guarantee you, once we get them all back, the difference in terms of what the players will look forward to. I say the players will look forward to more than anybody. It'll be massive.
I think I might have mentioned it before, that my father and Eddie O'Connor, the legendary Kilkenny cornerback, had a running discussion one day in Carlow. I can't remember if it was a league match or was it an early Leinster Championship match, but they had an ongoing row with each other over something I think Eddie O'Connor did to Eamon Scallon. I think it was. It went on for a while. It was entertaining. How about yourself, Oisín? Any Did you ever get struck by a Tyrone fan?
No, no, I didn't get struck by a Tyrone fan. They're too slow. But they wouldn't have been able to catch me. But the one that sticks out for me was we had played Port Leash in an All-Ireland club semi-final in Parnell Park. And I was playing full forward. And there was a boy from Port Leash behind the goals. And he just was at me from start to finish. And I switched around and said, at least I don't have to listen to him in the second half. But he'd come up just to keep me company. He'd come up. And about 4 or 5 weeks later, we were down to Port Leash playing in the league. And there he was again, standing behind the fucking goals. And and again, we switched around. And I remember seeing Joe Kernan saying to me, we get into the full forward lane, will you? You're playing full forward, you're not in the half forward lane. I says, I am today. I'm not coming back in the list of him. I'm going to have 90 minutes of him. So I stayed out the fever the rest of the game. He absolutely tortured me. I don't know what he had against me or what I did on him, but he had it in for me. Anyway, that was 2 games in a row.
Fantastic. I love that. I'm glad I asked that question. Moving on, this is Rory. As I was saying beforehand, this is something I kind of tried to raise last week and it didn't quite catch. But thankfully, without even being prompted by me, Aidan O'Rourke kind of took it up in his column this week, which is, and obviously being Aidan, he explained it far better than I ever could. Just to read out a bit of it, this is about kind of the new rules and kind of where the game is going.
Yep.
Yeah, the drip fed message is clear. Those whose opinion matters most want to see high scoring games where the skillful player is rewarded at every opportunity. We now have a playing environment where shadowing passes for tackling and skills that don't contribute to the creation of scores are diminishing steadily. And so the game is where someone wanted it to be 5 years ago, high scoring and approaching non-contact in nature. It may now be a product that sells to the modern middle classes as they decide which of the array of sporting options best fits their kids for the weekend, but has lost much of the physicality and sense of contest that set Gaelic games apart. It's strong enough stuff. Like, I think it was fairly conventional. It was fairly straight down the line until you mentioned middle class and kind of the idea of selling the sport for kids, which is that's taking it a touch further to give the maybe the GA more credit for foresight than they deserve.
I think in fairness, Aidan, it is definitely a trend and a feature of the first 2 weeks of the Allianz Leagues. But the proviso here is it's only the first 2 weeks. There was a sense for me, and I'd be very interested again in everybody's view here. There was almost an element. You remember when you played schoolyard jumpers for goalposts and you had a rule 5 half time, 10 all over, you know, so the first to get to 5 goals. That's what Donegal Monaghan was like, you know. It was like, because there was so many goal chances either end. And there was a juvenile nature to it, which I would say is a combination of all of the things that Aidan includes in that excerpt you read out, Mikey, in terms of the new rules, you know, obviously heavily weighted in favor of the attacker, cornerbacks, fullbacks now being expected to defend one-on-one, which is something that they may not have been expected to do for a few years. And obviously, then they're afraid to put the hand in or to get involved in any way, shape or form in a physical sense because of the triple whammy, which is the sin bin stroke penalty rule, which I think is very penal for the offence that probably wasn't even warranted in the first place, because by and large, the black card has worked despite all the negativity around that. I do think this will all settle down as well. I think what eventually will happen is referees will start to be much more judicious about the awarding of penalties, and you will see a certain element of physicality reintroduce itself. I think there's a fairy tale element to Gaelic football at the minute that the championship will quell very, very quickly once it comes around the corner, which it is coming at a fairly quick pace. So I wouldn't be too worried just yet. I think Gaelic football is in a very good place. I'm not saying I wouldn't be decrying that. But I think once we get into the nitty-gritty of championship, these 5-27s to 4-13s and all, that's all going to go out the window. And I don't think we'll go back to the old days of 6-5 or 4-3s but I think that there will be a happy medium found, and I wouldn't be too worried just yet.
Yeah, Tomás, as a former Teak Tough defender, where do you stand on this? We know how you feel about the attacking mark, and you've a spectrum of reasons for disliking that. But specifically here, it does obviously disadvantage a defender who can't tackle in what used to be an advantageous moment for a defender to tackle. It's now taken away, like when someone comes back down to the ground. But also, the tackle's never been well defined, and now you have brought in the rule around cynical play, which makes any kind of clumsy-ish tackle near to goal has the absolute maximum penalty.
I hate. There's three rules jumping out of my head at the moment: the mark, the advantage, and this new cynical rule. The cynical rule, I don't understand why he was brought in, to be quite honest with you. We had a black card in our game to deal with cynicism in our game.
And it had worked. I think the black card works, Tomás. I mean, I know the black card gets a lot of stick, but the black card eradicated the third man tackle, it eradicated that more or less overnight. Like, the black card has been a success by and large. Would you agree?
I would, but the issue with that black card then is the consistency of the referee, which is another chat. That's where you have chats in and out. But so was there a rut of decisions last year that in around the goal, that goal chances were missed because of cynical tackles? And I'm saying no. So the only reason that I can actually think of why this was actually brought in was because there was an issue in hurling, and because of that, I don't know what committee was above there that put it together, it was decided to bring this in. Now, I can't remember pundits talking about it. I can't remember managers talking about it. I can't remember players talking about that there was an issue with it. As Rory says, there was five rules brought in at the time, and the sin bin for the black card, I think, is a good rule. You have 10 minutes in the bin. But yeah. There's an anomaly in it. I can't even pronounce that word. Last Sunday, right? The tackle that was made by Philly McMahon on Stephen O'Brien, okay? That was a penalty, properly a penalty. Philly McMahon got a yellow card.
Yeah.
If you brought Stephen O'Brien out in front of that goal and that exact same tackle with nobody between Stephen O'Brien and the goal, that exact same tackle was made, Philly McMahon, it would have been a penalty. Philly McMahon would have got a black card and it would have been deemed a cynical challenge. So there's this kind of get out of jail card, and it's the same with the black card. A high challenge will be deemed as, like, there's been no doubt in my mind that Philly McMahon wasn't going to allow Stephen O'Brien through. I don't see, there was two incidents above on the end line, there was one incident on the end line in the Roscommon game where the challenge was made. Very difficult. It's very difficult for a referee to they have enough to be doing. They'll try to put the rules as much as they can in, but they have about five or six things to run through their head, first of all. And who's taken into account that nobody pull off for Conor Gormley? One of the best blocks. And I know it doesn't happen that often. Mark used to do it fairly often.
Palmer
Are we
Sullivan.
Underestimating the ability of defenders? Are we overestimating the ability of forwards? I think there's too many holes to be pinched in it. And I think referees, like, will make mistakes. And then I don't want to be talking about that stuff on the Sunday game. I don't want to be talking about black cards. I don't want to be talking about... I think the game is in a very good place right now at the moment.
That's interesting what you said there, Tomás, about underestimating defenders in a way. Like, kind of saying that, as you said, the wonder block can't be, you know, to say that somebody who's 5 feet away can't make a desperate dive and get in the way and prevent the chance. Things are being, you know, it's all very cut and dry, almost as if, you know, a defender going through on goal, that means definite goal, because, you know, we're taking, you know, as you say, the speed of a cornerback tracking back, you're taking almost like the goalkeeper has been taken out of the equation as well. And it could be seen as a little bit of a one plus one equals two, which is very rarely the case in a game of Gaelic football, which is chaotic.
Yeah, and you know, what will happen, lads, is eventually if these kind of rules stay in, the coaching will change. The coaching of how you actually... train fellas are like the big thing I have with the mark, for example, and you go back to it, I don't think, right, the mark will slow down the game. It'll be stop start. It's not, I think the average is, why was the mark brought in the first place? To cut down on hand passing. Has it achieved that? No, it hasn't. No. So therefore, is the mark necessary? And the argument, the counter-argument would be, on average, there's only probably about three marks per game. That's not my point at all. If it shouldn't be in our game, it shouldn't be in our game. The advantage rule would be stop-start. The cynical foul inside would be stop-start, which could lead... I'd have to ask the question. We had issues with Tyrone nearly being successful playing a certain type brand of football. Thank God for Dublin. They blew them out of the water. Football is fine. I think every team in the country, low and high, are coming to the realisation that there's one, you have to have good defence, yes. And I think the defined tackle is an issue. But more importantly, you do have to have shape and you do have to have attacking line. And I think football is not, I remember a few years ago, everybody hammering football, and rightly so for the way it was at the time. But I think full circle, I think we can have a few digs at the hurling boys.
Oh, big time. I mean, you were in Ballybuffet on Saturday night, Oisín. What did you make of it as a game now, you know, the style of it?
Well, I think there's a couple of different things at play, and even in reference to that game. Like, it took to the 68th minute of that game, and there was only one advanced mark in the game, and that was Patrick McBrady.
Which he took 25 seconds to take, by the way.
But anyway. Yeah, very close to 30. Very close to 30.
The rule is 15.
Yeah, and the thing about the advanced mark is, so you look at that and you think, well, the advanced mark's not really having a massive effect on the game, but it's having an effect on the way defenders defend.
Yeah.
Okay? And you put that alongside the rules we're after talking about as far as cynicism and the penalty and the black card and the...
advantage.
And the advantage. Okay, yeah. So take all those things into play and you would say, well, everything is stacked against the defender. Okay? That's the first thing. Rewind then to Conor McCarthy's second goal where he spins out of a tackle. He's surrounded by three Donegal defenders and he spins out of a tackle. That's nothing to do with the advanced mark or cynical play or the advantage rule. That's just downright poor defending. And what I seen at the weekend, there was a lot of poor defending. There was a lot of bodies in that Donegal defence in particular. And look at if the game ended up in a draw, and I know when I was commenting on it, you know, I focused a lot on how good Monaghan were, and I didn't focus a lot on how poor they were defensively. That's because I'm not used to seeing Donegal that poor in defence. Donegal defenders are paying a price for what has gone on before, as far as Pack's defences are concerned. They are not in any way comfortable one-on-one. Not in any way comfortable at all. And do you know what the biggest thing for me was? I'm thinking, maybe there's a lack of pace. Owen Bond Gallagher is probably one of the quickest players in the game. And he was called a couple of things. But in particular, the one where Conor McCarthy spins out of the tackle at 3 minutes. I mean, if you're a manager, you go absolutely insane about that stuff. I mean, this thing of marking 2 or 3 yards off your man, you can't do it anymore. Forwards as a result of the legacy of blanket defences have got better. They're used to operating in 2 and 3 yards of space. And as a result of that, now they're in 5 and 6 yards of space when they get the ball.
Mm.
Absolutely no problem kicking the ball over the bar.
Yeah.
I mean, like, as far as putting all those things together, the game was only ever going to go one way. And then I went to the match on Sunday and down packed their defence with all 15 bodies behind the ball, okay? And me get the ball in the middle of the field and I'm thinking, they're going to have to hold on to it. They're going to have to be patient. No, they kicked it into Jordan Morris, who's 5'10"-ish. He catches the ball, he swivels and he kicks the ball over the bar. So if somebody tells me that is something to do with the rules and not very poor defending, do you know what I mean? Like I understand that the rules have some part to play in all this, but I also think the art of defending has. Well, I think we talked about it a year ago, Tomás. I think the art of defending is nowhere near where it was, that's a result of the legacy as what has been going on.
I had a conversation we dissect every bloody game in Kerry, and we were chatting about the Kerry Dublin game, and we were, you know, if you look at Kerry right now, you have a forward line that can hurt, and the general consensus is that you've a back line that can be hurt. And exactly what Oisin just said there, because of the way teams have been coached to defend, the man-on-man who Oisin would have met with Kerry, with Mike McCarthy, with Mark, with Tom Sullivan, that type of player isn't there. I remember being sitting inside in dressing rooms at halftime, and the boys would have to mark in acres. Mark might tell me, like he'd say, Jesus, come back to the 45. I might be hanging around the 65-yard line. Jesus, come back to the 45 at least. Give me some bit of cover, he says. We're being destroyed inside. Those type of players are exactly the type of players that are thin on the ground at the moment. The Dubs
That's it. And I say to Moss, that's it. Like, it's probably why Dublin have stolen such a march on everybody, because they do have those touch-tight, mano-a-mano type defenders with Philly and Johnny Cooper and Michael Fitzsimons and, you know, like John Small. They have lads that can cope in a one-on-one situation because they have the pace, they have the physicality. But a lot of other counties seem to struggle. Is that a dereliction of coaching? Is it?
I think you are coaching in a different way. I think teams have been coaching in a different way. I think teams, they'll do this one-on-one stuff inside in a small little square, and that's grand. One-on-one stuff inside in a small square. Jesus, Oisin, you know how much space you have inside. Mm-hmm. There'd be two fellas. I remember Ronan Clark on Seamus Minehan. I don't care how good a defender you are. If there's space inside and if there's no pressure on the kicker coming in, it's open country. It's absolutely... Colin Corkery, I remember, gave Tom Sullivan an awful spanking down in Parky Cove one night. And we came in at half-time, and it was before anybody came into the dressing room, myself, Dara and Tom Sullivan. I'd say Corkery was after kicking 6-7 points from playoff, Tom Sullivan. And we were just sitting inside. And this was in a Munster Championship match. And myself and Dara were sitting down. There were only the three of us there. And geez, myself and Dara just got a fit of laughing at Tom, because Tom was being absolutely destroyed. And because we started laughing, Tom's...
He got tick.
Point was, he was just shaking. His, yeah. The space inside is cruel, lads. It's cruel. And we just started breaking down laughing. Jack Connor just walked in the door, looked at the three of us laughing. We were down 6 or 7 points. He's looking at us, says, is it any wonder, he says, is it any wonder we're losing? But the point was, the space was there. And there is a bit of that space coming back in. If you go full man-on-man with Dublin and Kerry, they'll go 15-on-15. Kerry dropped one man back, and Merchant went as a sweeper for a lot of the game. But there is space, and the likes of Conn and the likes of David Clifford will make hay.
And if Tom O'Sullivan couldn't handle that in that instance, Donegal defenders, as Oisin says, who grew up on a mass defence, like, to them, this is completely alien.
Yeah. But Carol Lacey, Oisin, before Donegal went on the blanket, Lacey had 3 All-Stars marking space, men in space. Like, that defending is, it's not there anymore. You don't have the players. They're not coached that way from a young age up. I don't know that's the only explanation you can give for it.
So what happens, Oisin? Does the game revert to what it was to save the players, or do the players change to save the game, or which way does it go? Not save the game, being a bit dramatic there for poetic license.
Right, so can you let's put ourselves in the Donegal camp this week, okay? So when you go to Armagh this weekend, okay, you know, and you're playing in that way, and you look around and you think, have I got the players to defend against the Armagh forwards? And if I don't, what do I do? I try and get players back into that space, but the players back into the space aren't doing anything anymore. They aren't doing anything anymore because there's two things. There's if it's not the ball inside, the transition teams are improving so much at the transition as well. But I think the normal reaction to that is to go and kick lumps out of somebody the following weekend, and you don't get away with that anymore. And so I think I genuinely think the summer will be a summer of high scoring games. I think luckily enough in Ulster we'll be able to save football for Mana, and Monaghan will still be 7-6. but I genuinely think that I don't think that the game can turn unless the rules are tweaked.
Yeah.
Turn back. I mean.
Okay. But would you agree, Tomás?
Yeah, I don't know really. I think I wouldn't like to see rules tweaked for the sake of tweaking them. Like I don't like a rules committee having to feel that they have to introduce it. Sometimes just do nothing. Like if you, I guarantee you right now, it might, okay, if you didn't have the cynical foul rule, if you didn't have the mark and if you didn't have the advantage rule in at the moment, would it lend itself to a better game? Probably. Will there still be issues with teams hand passing and over holding? Probably. But I think it would force teams to actually coach their defenders in a different type of a way, where you'd find then that the Higgins from Leash was a fella that was always tight. And these man markers inside in the corner, those type of player are a dying breed in my eyes. Because those fellas getting all-stars with Donegal there for a few years, and you said, Jesus, I would have got a few more all-stars if there were six fellas beside me helping me out as well. Like, do you know? And that kind of defending isn't what it was. And I think teams have... the success isn't coming from a completely over unbalanced total defensive. And I don't know, is there much wrong with the game, Mikey? I think the game has sorted itself out in terms of people know you're going to have a balance in terms of attack and defense. So is it a case of tweak a few things, try to get the cynicism out? I've no issue with that, but the tackle, and I don't want to go and stop start like I just to watch even to watch. I don't want not to mind to play in it, to watch a game. You don't want to, like, I don't understand why they have the mark in the Aussie rules anyway, because the size of the pitch there is huge and they'd have to do it some way, but less is more for me.
Yeah.
Rory, you mentioned about the fact that Dublin have of, you know, the defenders that are basically stoppers. Okay, and I think
Mayo had a few of them as well. In fairness,
Chris Byrne and a few guys like that, and yep. Keegan whenever he was told to do a job. But I do think that it's a little bit easier maybe for teams like Dublin to have a couple of stoppers, because you know you're more inclined to do exactly what you're told in order to be part of that setup, whereas I do think that there's a lot of defenders now who fancy themselves as footballers, more so than any previous generation, and that is because, you know, when you're picking 1 to 15 and you find number 2 standing a corner forward, well then you want him to be able to feel comfortable there, kick the ball over the bar, whereas, you know, as I say, going back, not even that far, you know, we're talking about defenders who, number one, primary objective is to stop the corner forward and then play it on to somebody else, go back in and do your job. And that's about having everyone having their little niche in the team. And because of the way we have played over the last 5, 6, 7, what feels like 10 years, those players all are more adept at playing football and they're not, you know, just all-out stoppers anymore.
Yeah. Tomás, you're involved in underage teams, schools, etc. Are you coaching one-on-one defending? Do you see talented, the next generation of Mark O'Shea's coming through, or is there no desire to be that player, or how are you seeing it for the next generation?
I don't think... The beauty about coaching at school level is that tactics isn't a big thing. You know, it's catch and kick, and the basics are taught and the basics are focused on. But I'm involved with a team, an intermediate team in Glanmire, and I think at club level, you see, those rules aren't in it at club level at the moment. They're not in at minor level, they're not in at under 20 level, but they will be next year. And if clubs want to get rules changed, they have to wait till 2025. And it's only these rules committee that can actually bring it to Congress themselves. So if we want to see changes with those rules, it has to come from the actual rule makers themselves. But you don't have to, like, are you coaching in that way? No, but I would be. I am coaching in that way, really, because the days of 3 lads marking 3 forwards inside the 65, I would be. We've only started off. We're only back a week and a half, and we're trying to play as much football as we can. We're still in pods, but I would be doing a lot of that. 3-on-3, 2-on-2, 1-on-1, but not in confined spaces, in big open spaces. Because at the end of the day, at club level, Mikey, it's way easier to win games if you can take out 2 or 3 players. It's not like that at inter-county level. Well, for the most. If you take out 2 or 3 top players at club level. So you need fellas who will mark tight, and you need fellas who will be able to snuff out a player. That was the beauty. Like, the beauty of that Kerry team that we had at the time is that we had three players. All the top teams had them at the time, Oisín. And you go in, you'd say, right, who have Galway got? They've got Joyce, they've got Meehan, they've got whoever, right? Put our boys on them, 1, 2, 3. Forwards, you need to do our job. We'll do our best. Help us out if you can, slowing them down, coming down. Don't let them get good ball, and we'll do the rest. And if you can have that confidence, like they all, we were talking about the Dubs there. Dubs, most teams fear Dubs, so they bring a man back. Boom, Dubs delighted. They can play their sweeper, they can put their man back. Kerry went man on man, and when Kerry went man on man, yes, you do need attack at a forward line that will hurt them, but you also need the men at the back to take up the three or four leg.
That's the beauty of it. I'm glad I brought that up. That was very interesting. I think we better look ahead a little bit to the games this weekend. The starting with Division One, like as we said at the start, we're into match day three, and it's D-Day. It's Super Saturday and Super Sunday, which is just that the hand we've been dealt this week, or this year with the coronavirus. Oisín, it looks Donegal and Tyrone are kind of in the box seats if they get their results. Tyrone have the advantage of being at home to Monaghan, and obviously Armagh are hosting Donegal, so they're likely to go through to the semi-final, shall we say. To face Kerry anyway, you would imagine, and then we'll see. I'm just interested that Kerry going through to play one of, for argument's sake, Donegal and Tyrone could be a precursor to an All-Ireland semi-final, so I'm just finding interest in it that way. Maybe I'm jumping ahead of myself, am I?
I don't know. I think whenever the results for me are being quite strange, because honestly, when I've seen Monaghan against Armagh the first day, I more or less had written them off. And they come out against Donegal were very, very, very good in a lot of aspects. Maybe run out of steam a little bit. Just that little bit of know-how, maybe just got Donegal the draw. I think Armagh the first day, I was happier with Armagh last weekend than I was the first weekend, even though we lost. Because I think we've proved now that
we can be at that level.
I think we can be competitive. And I think we seem to have, I don't know whether it's the Kerry influence or what, but we just look as if we have a lot more know-how than we had. It looked as
it's a team a long time in the making as well, though, Oisín, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And even the younger guys on the team now are fairly experienced. They've had a nice little bit of football, and Armagh's progress hasn't been like, it hasn't just been in a straight lane. You know, it's deviated a little bit. There's been a few learnings and a few teachings along the way. And it just feels as if we're ready to be back up there. And now Donegal are a different proposition altogether.
And a pretty favourable draw in the Ulster Championship. Would that be fair to say, Osh?
Yeah, I think Antrim is a very winnable game. Realistically, I should be beating Antrim. And I think, you know, Monaghan, on what has gone on so far, you know, it's a shootout between them, and that's the way I thought it would be at the start of the year, the first place and also final. And I don't feel like I felt last year, in that when we played against Donegal, I thought any air of respectability out of that game, and we got none, would have been great. But I do think that those four teams are pretty closely matched, maybe more closely matched than people think. I think the fact that Donegal are going to arrive in Armagh without Murphy is a massive one as well. So I think, you know, we have something to play for. But look, if you're looking further down the lane, and I'm thinking who would be the best team to pull it up to Dublin or Kerry, I said at the start of the year, I thought Tyrone. I still think that. And we haven't seen McShane yet. And I think that opens up a whole new lane of possibilities for Tyrone, who are already, as you can see, evolving. But I think Tyrone McShane in there, and I think Tyrone would be a very dangerous animal.
Yeah, Tomás, they do seem to, like, it's two games in, etc., but Tyrone do seem to have they've come out of their shells, shall we say. There's more football being played, to put it in a kind of a rather blunt way, and they seem to have, whether there's certain attackers there who seem to be given their opportunity now, and they're grabbing it two games in, and they do seem like a different proposition already, although with the caveat we're two games into a strange league.
Donaghy, I think Donaghy is a find, and I suppose the confidence more than anything has jumped out for me. Yes, he's a brilliant kicker and all that, but the confidence of him, he'll add to it. McShane will add to it when he comes back. But I do think they're trying to change it up. I do think they're trying to be more direct. I do think they're trying to get their heads up. And those players that we spoke about, the Hamseys, the McKernans, they have a couple of dogs at the back that are capable of doing it if they get the support and the work rate from there up. I think when you look at Tyrone as a full squad, they jump out as a team. Yeah, can they run? Can they have their attackers? Are they a good goalie? They tick a lot of I suppose boxes when it comes to it. Like, but for me, like the question marks. Any contender for the All-Ireland, and I know I'm jumping here from what we're actually specifically talking about, they can be actually challenged, as to say that there's an underbelly there that isn't toughened up yet. Armagh Asher felt it, Monaghan felt it, Donegal felt it, Kerry felt to it, Galway felt to it. So look, until they actually win something, and Tyrone, the challenge is for them, they'll have two games in the league, straight into a championship, and anything can happen in a championship. I think the lesser teams with a little bit less confidence maybe that they'd have in a league will get that confidence going in. What have they got to lose? Knockout. Look what happened last year. Look what Cavan achieved. Look what Tipperary achieved. All teams will need to be... The league is brilliant. Like, that's why the likes of Kerry going up to Roscommon. I think Kerry, it's a great test for Kerry coming up for what they have in the Munster Championship. Play Roscommon, but treat it like a championship match. Treat it like, don't have it. Kerry are expected to beat Roscommon. But that's when Kerry seems to get caught. And, you know, go up, get a proper performance and come out of it. I think there's a lot to be learned for the last couple of games. And Tyrone especially, Mikey, I do think last couple of games will allow them to breathe more into their game. Yeah. And I think they will be they'll put down a statement in this year's championship, I feel.
Yeah, and Rory, like in a normal league, you get your seven games at least and maybe a final. Here, there's an advantage to making a final, because you're almost doubling the number of games you're getting. You know, everybody's getting the fourth game, be it a relegation or promotion semi-final. But you want that final. You want that, because we're coming straight into the championship, that you want another high-class competitive game, because there's been no preseason we're talking about.
Well, unless you're Donegal, because if Donegal make it, there won't be a final. But I think it's a great format. I know they had to cut their cloth, and I think they've cut it really well. And because from this week, like, you got a warm-up game at the start, you could afford to lose that, and then straight away you're under pressure. So if you have any ambition of getting promoted, I think the top end of Division 1 might become ever so slightly false, unless we end up with a Kerry-Dublin final, which is very possible too. But I think the fact that, like, effectively this weekend now, there are quarter finals for lots of teams, and that's probably the way that a lot of teams will look at it. And what you don't want is you don't want to be dicing with relegation, because to end up getting relegated in a three-team format would be a bit tough to take now, especially for certain teams that may have already just been promoted last year. So, like, it's nearly more interesting the further down the divisions you go. Certainly Division 2 is very, very interesting. Again, Division and Division 3. Like Division 2, Colm Collins. Colm Collins, for me, I was saying this to the lads, Colm Collins to me is like the Sean Dyche of the Gaelic football world. Like, this guy, in terms of how he's just able to get a tune out of these guys and consistently overachieve with, you know, and here he is now again, with the possibility of being promoted up to Division 1.
No Gary Brennan, everyone thought.
No Gary Brennan, like, and it goes up to Newbridge and, you know, and gets a win, and they have Cork going to Ennis this weekend. Cork have to win. They can actually afford, I think they can afford to even lose the match and still make the semi-finals. So, and I'd fancy them against Cork actually this weekend. I think they could win that. And Cork then could be facing a relegation back down to Division 3. So I think... The we'll say the bottom of Division 1 down as far as the top of Division, we'll say Division 3. It's very, very interesting there this weekend. The top end of Division 1, the teams that ultimately are going to be contesting the All-Ireland, I'd have a sneaky suspicion that a lot of them might just start lifting the pedal off the throttle ever so slightly because the injuries are starting to rack up, and I'd say managers now are saying to themselves, could be, I don't know, interesting lads' views, you know, do we really not want to be going hell for leather over the next 2 weekends, knowing that we want to actually have a sustained run from July into August? I mean, what would you think? Will they go hell for leather? Have they any choice, lads? What do you think?
Yeah, I think I take your point that you are risking injuries, but I certainly think straight away when you were talking about that, like there's some teams like Galway need to get a bit of confidence into the legs before they hit championship in my eyes. The likes of Kerry maybe, yeah, but I do think the point I was making earlier, outside of Dublin, name the teams that can't be actually accused of being able to step up when most needed. So in the case of Kerry, do you rest the players that you know and you give fellas an opportunity? Look what Mayo did, lads, in the last couple of years. Yes, they went down to Division 2, and somebody said that Kerry have tried 27 players in their first two matches already, or 25 players, something like that. But Mayo have consistently tried players, and what you do is you find out who's ready and who's not ready, and you'd like to see that. But the good thing for Mayo, the standard doesn't seem to drop like with these new introductions. So I take your point, Rory. Yeah, I do think possibly with the proximity to championship for the first time ever, you have to take into account, is this too risky for certain players? Like, but then again, how many teams can actually afford to go in with that attitude? Like, I mean, if you're Galway right now, yes, you had a win at the weekend, great, but they're facing Dublin. Do you want to take a hiding against Dublin and then face into a championship? Yeah. Where you're going to
where you may have possibly been relegated as well, Tomás. Yeah. And you may have possibly been relegated as well, you know. So yeah, so I suppose from their point of view, it's a really good conundrum for management to have to try and solve. Now some of them will probably give out because we did see quite a few injuries and Eamon Fitzmaurice, who you would have soldiered with, Tomás. He maintains that. Having watched it, that it's more than just a coincidence. He thinks the curve is very, very steep in terms of the start line to get into championship. And he thinks that this could become more of a feature that you will see lads start to pull up with hamstrings, calf strains, you know, all those little kind of soft tissue type stuff that'll knock fellas out because they're having to kind of reach a peak of fitness much faster this time around.
On that note, did I hear the Armagh full back line? All three of them hamstrings.
Yeah, I know Armagh lost 5 defenders the weekend, and I don't know how serious or not serious they are, but I think that soft tissue injuries were something which we hadn't completely eradicated, but we had it largely over the last number of years. So, like, there's absolutely no doubt that the ferocity, and in particular of the top division, Division 1, you just can't get away with anything. You can't get away with being slightly off because... you know, you'll just get so badly punished. I think on your point, I think there are teams who are just going to look at it on a case by case basis of racking up the injuries. They will have to rein it back in. But I think for the likes of Dublin and I genuinely think Kerry as well, I think that they will go. They will keep going and try and get that extra game and try and win the league, because I do think the next time that Kerry will be properly tested will be in an All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah, and one team who can seem to coast now for their final game, Oisín, I want to get your opinion, is Derry, which has just been a phenomenal start to the season. A Rory Gallagher team with a points difference of plus 35 after two matches, scoring goals, kicking points. Okay, we can say that they're playing in Division 3, but they were in Division 4 2 years ago, so they're certainly on an upward trajectory. I don't think anyone's ever doubted the talent in Derry, have they? But maybe it's just kind of getting them together into a cogent team has kind of been the issue, hasn't it?
I think the biggest thing for a lot of teams as you go down to divisions is, and a lot of the top teams take it as a given, is first of all, getting the people in the dressing room that you really want in the dressing room. And I think for the first time in a while, they have that. They have buy-in. The Slot Neil boys are all in. They have bypassed the hurling. And they're all in there with the footballers. And I watched them against Armagh in the championship last year, and they weren't a million miles away. They have refined that a little bit. They have the stingiest defence, which you would expect, but they're putting the scores up and the other thing. And that's, you know, that's what we've been talking about all day, is trying to marry those two things. And they are obviously a little bit easier in Division 3. Let's call a spade. But I think the biggest thing is that he has everybody he wants. Everybody's buying into what he's selling. And
Conor Glass makes a big difference.
Conor Glass makes a huge difference. And the thing about Conor Glass and Conor McKenna with Tyrone is that Conor McKenna last year seemed to hit the ground running and seems to have maybe not brought that form into this year, whereas Glass really found it difficult to find his feet when he came back last year. I know they're a completely different type of player, playing in a completely different area of the field, but Conor Glass just seems to have taken a little bit more time. But yeah. He won a Holden Cup medal at 14 years of age. Like, you know what I mean? He's been a star from he was from he was very, very young. So he's exceptional. And you know, he's a massive plus for them coming back in now. Yeah. But McGuigan a full forward is as good as any forward in the country, lads. You know what I mean? I know he doesn't get a lot of He's not going to get a lot of applause playing Division 3, but I seen him playing 4 years ago against a packed Tyrone defence on his own up front, and I think he finished with 8 or 9 points. You know what I mean? And so at that stage, like, and again, that's another guy who's used to operating in that sort of confined spaces. So, you know, he's reveling in what he's seeing now as far as the way football has turned.
Yeah, it's probably the game of the lower divisions, Tomáthan, isn't it? Derry are going to play the Ulster champions. So, looking ahead to the summer, as everybody is, like, Derry, it's hard to dismiss their first two games. But if they're to turn over the Ulster champions in Cavan, then maybe the bear pit of the Ulster Championship has just been thrown another bear.
I've given up trying to predict the Ulster Championship. I mean, who would have picked last year? What happens? It's a world of its own, like, in terms you can predict safely, but they have a belief. It says, and we have Down or we have Armagh. They have this kind of belief up there. So what Cavan did last year, we give everybody around the country, and this is the knockout championship, Mikey. It's a hate going in the back door. I think a lot of teams would rather the knockout championship. That's another debate for another day. But the Ulster Championship, like every other year, is the most interesting championship that we have, and probably the reason why we haven't gone down the road of changing up the whole championship today. You know,
I blame us and everything, John.
You can't do wrong for doing right, or right for doing wrong. Either way, you're done for. Okay, lads, look, there is stuff to play for in Division 3 South and Division 4 North and South as well. But we can't cover it all in one day. A shout out to Carlo v Wexford there. If Wexford managed to beat Carlo, the three poor teams in Division 4 South will finish on 2 points, and it'll come down to points difference. Waterford have -14, so it's even the lowest and least thought of division has something of interest this weekend when there's only one game on in it. Lads, it was a pleasure. I think there's some very interesting stuff there. I am personally going to go away and have a think about all that now. So thank you, Oisín, thank you, Tomás, and thank you, Rory. Just mentioning our other podcasts, Rugby, Soccer, and Marie Crowe's We Become Heroes. It's Peter Canavan this week. If you want to learn how Peter Canavan became God, go listen to that. And shout out to the third year coach in whatever school Peter Canavan went to, who dropped him from the team, which pretty much made Peter Canavan go off and become God. So
not too sure that's how they refer to him in Armagh, or would it be?
same letters.
And of course, Saturday and Sunday Sport will keep you across all the football action and the one stray hurling match, and we'll have League Sunday on Sunday night. So, okay, thanks, lads. That's all the promotion done. We'll catch you all again next week. Goodbye.
How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. There's the whistle.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it! It's over the bar!